I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This Cowboys Monday is powered by K-Post Roofing, and this segment is brought to you by your North Texas Ford dealers. Ford is the best in Texas.
You're listening to the KNC Masterpiece. Blake Elliott joined by Brennan Baxter. Hopefully you guys are enjoying your Labor Day weekend. You guys texting, a lot of you guys headed out to the lake today. Some of you guys grilling. Some of you guys just enjoying some nice radio while you sit in your car and drive across town. Keep texting in what you're doing. We'll read it here on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Text him if you got any questions for Brennan. It's his first show. Text him anything. Ask him, you know what, Asa, what's your favorite color?
Oh, blue.
Why blue?
You've got the...
It's always been blue. What do you think about people who change their favorite color?
You got to stick to your guns, man.
When do you think is the age you can no longer change it? Because, you know, like, say if you're like three and it's blue, and then when you become like... conscious and moving around.
Conscious. Yeah, you're not conscious at three.
Some kids are.
You know, yeah, maybe let's go like 10 years old.
10 years old is the cutoff. Whatever you are at 10.
10's the cutoff. Because you might get, you know, join a new sports team in fifth or sixth grade that's got a sick red or something. Or, you know, it's always been blue. Rangers got blue in them. Mavericks got blue. It was kind of easy. It was an easy color.
What do you think about me? I change every couple years.
Okay.
Like it was blue when I grew up. Then it was red. Now it's... Then there was a point where it was like a, not a lime green, but a, what is that color of green? It's like a soft green. I don't know what the color palette is, if you will. And then it was lavender, like most of college.
Okay.
Like a light purple.
Is this
purple.
Because you're seeing like a know. New shirt or a I don't new know. Tee? Or you're just it, like, ah, oh, that color.
I wish I could understand my brain of why it does that. And if you ask me right now my favorite colors, I'd probably say like tan, like a sand tan color, like a military tan.
Okay. Fuchsia. I mean, it doesn't change my whole opinion of you. Yeah. It might dock you a little bit, but I understand. People are allowed to have different preferences. That's what we're here for. But I've been a blue guy pretty much my whole life.
Blue guy is. Let's see if you guys are blue on the Dallas Cowboys defense. We were talking about the offense on the other side. Let's give you guys a defense. No Micah Parsons. What does this depth chart look like? How excited or nervous are you when I'm about to read these names? So let's go ahead. We'll save the best for last. We'll save the defensive line. Let's go through the secondary. So right now you got Deron Bland slated to start at your nickel on our lads. And then at your corner position right now, it's got our boy Trayvon Diggs and Kyer Elam on there. And you might be asking yourself, Blake, I thought Diggs wasn't ready. But per our boy Clarence Hill, who tweeted this 19 hours ago, Cowboys cornerback Trayvon Diggs said he did everything in practice today. No limitations. He would not commit to being on the field against the Eagles on Thursday. He said it would depend on how he feels, but he did not rule it out, but he feels good. Clarence going back and forth. His knee is ready, Clarence Hill says. So, Tolos, 877-801-1053. Do you want Trayvon Diggs to play in week one, even if it's maybe rushing back a little bit? Me personally, you obviously want Trayvon Diggs healthy and you want him out there. I don't think anyone's discussing is Trayvon Diggs better than or worse than anybody that you would play instead of it. But obviously the risk of injury, kind of rushing it back. You're going against, it's on Thursday. It's 3 days away against one of the better receiving cores you're going to play. This isn't going to be a slouch preseason warm-up game. You're going to be going full speed against A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. So I'll ask you, Brennan, do you want our boy Trayvon to presumably kind of be rushing back? And maybe he's completely ready. I don't know. I'm not in his head. Do you want him on the field on Thursday?
If he is rushing back and it's a risk of injury against games, you would need him in later as well. I would say no. Do you need him? Absolutely. You need him on the field because your cornerback room is not very strong. Kyer Elam coming over through the trade from the Buffalo Bills. I don't know if you had copped the 2024 AFC Championship game, but the moment he got put in for Christian Benford.
Oh, it was bad.
It was bad.
And a lot of people were calling him the worst corner in football as far as someone who gets reps, and I don't think it was far off if you watch any Bills games.
It was pretty rough, and the Chiefs just kind of picked on him that whole game. And so maybe he's developed over the offseason, but he's not someone I necessarily trust based off what I've seen to go in and stop a Devontae or an AJ Brown.
This is a great person to ask. I completely forgot. Now, if you guys don't know, in the break, my boy Brendan shared, he's got a little bit of Bills, a little Bills background.
Got some Bills love, man. Family from Western New York as well. Family currently, some family in Western New York. So, you know, also root for the Bills as well. So I'm familiar with the Kyir Elam story a little bit. Yeah.
So talk to me about Kyir Elam. Everybody, media-wise, has loved him in the offseason. He's done no wrong, has been the standout, came out of nowhere as a guy we swap late-round picks, and now he's going to be a starter. And no one seems to be that worried about it in comparison to your other corners. And I will mention the other corners, and I'm not going to talk out of turn about Tryquez Bridges and Reddy Stewart. I heard Wolchuk likes Reddy Stewart, but I'm not going to talk out of turn, act like I've seen a bunch of reps from these guys. They are guys you traded for, or excuse me, got off the waiver wire. Guys that took Kamon Hall's spot, Zion Childress' spot, guys, and those guys either got cut or on the practice squad. So the cornerback room right now, say Trayvon is not healthy, is Kyir Elam, Deron Bland, Bridges, who you just got from the Chargers, and Reddy Stewart, who you got from Minnesota. And then if you want to throw CJ Goodwin in, who doesn't actually play corner. Those are your corners.
Right. Yeah, and the Bland, look, I'm excited. You know, they
new contract.
Able to get the Bland extension done, which I want to, you know, is that timing there? You choose not to extend Micah or give him an extension. You trade him, and then here comes this four-year. It's kind of Jerry saying, hey, this wasn't me. I felt like that a little bit with the Bland. It was...
I'm sure they would love to get Tyler Smith done too.
Yeah,
this was that money allocated. You want to pay Smith? You want to play? You want to pay Bland? And here's the funny part: Bland's money doesn't kick in until next year. Obviously, still got the fifth year left. And a lot of people are, man, 23, 24 million seems like a lot for Deron Bland, sixth highest paid corner. And then I looked at it: Trayvon Diggs is making 19 million, and he's off your books next year. And there has been a good amount of speculation that Trayvon Diggs will not be on your team next year. So you're not paying two corners 20-plus million. You're paying one guy, most likely.
Right.
Most likely this would be projecting. So, yeah, it seems a lot if you're going to be paying Diggs and Bland, but they'll never be making 20 million at the same time.
Right.
Diggs is going to have it this year, 19. And then Bland next year will kick in, and maybe Diggs is off the team. Maybe he restructures. Maybe he's not on the team. Whatever. I don't see them both paying Diggs 19 and Bland 24 next year.
So we were doing grades for the offense previously. What do you grade the secondary? Safeties included with the cornerbacks. What's your grade for them?
Safeties in there, Malik Hooker, Donovan Wilson, their backups. Marquise Bell, who stepped up a lot and kind of got himself back in the ringer. Got our boy Izzy McQuamu cut, in my opinion, the way that he played. And Wanye Thomas, who I'm a big fan of. I do not like your safety room at all. Blake is not a believer in it. I've been very vocal about that. I don't like your cornerback room at all. I think this is the weakest part of your team. I'm going to give it a C-.
Okay.
I don't think this secondary is good at all.
Yeah. So does a healthy Diggs completely help? You're getting him at his best.
If you're getting him at his best Pro Bowl level, this jumps you up to like a B-C+. Like it's a big jump for me. I'll say B-. If Diggs is completely healthy, looks like the dog that he was a couple years ago, yes. But the last time we saw Trayvon Diggs play healthy football, he was scared to tackle. He was beefing with media members, and he was getting lost in coverage. That year, Deron Bland was your best cover corner, and I think he's still your best cover corner. He's your best sticky guy out there. Trayvon Diggs is still a very good corner, not great. Good corner, B-, B corner. Donovan Wilson and Malik Hooker, I am very low on. I think their time has come. I think we're getting towards the end of the row with both of these guys. Donovan Wilson being one of your captains, been on the team a while, hard hitter, really good in the box, absolutely horrendous in coverage. Malik Hooker might have had the most dropped interceptions last year. I don't have the numbers on that, but the amount of times he had a ball thrown right to him and it went right through his hands, Blake's just not a believer in it. I will be upfront and honest, I am a pessimist about this Dallas secondary. I think Wanye Thomas should get more reps, and I hope he does step in at some point at that free safety position. We'll have to wait and see. But Blake would give the secondary a C-.
C-. Okay, so if you've got a weak secondary, you need other areas on your defense, defensive front, linebackers to step up. If you're looking, obviously, we've talked about it, Micah's no longer on the team, but you brought over Kenny Clark. You know, Dante Fowler, Samuel Williams. How confident are you in this group San Micah that this is now a group that can still be very effective on the front four.
You know what? I might be changing my tune a little bit. If you guys heard me when the Micah news happened, I gave my thoughts, and I think it was on the next day as well, and I was not happy. And I'm still not happy overall, but the more I look at this depth chart in front of me, you got Marshawn Nealand at one side, you got Fowler at the other, you got Kenny Clark and Osa in the middle, you got Ezeraku and Sam Williams and James Houston backing up on the edge, then you got guys like Jay Toya, Mozzie Smith, Solomon Thomas, and Perrion Winfrey. So you got depth at the defensive tackle now. Like, Mozzie is going to be rotating in with Solomon Thomas. And there was thoughts that those guys would be getting starter reps. You got Jay Toya, who's had his moments, and Perrion Winfrey, who was great in the preseason, backing up those guys. Your edge rushers, I talked about earlier in the show. Lot to prove. I think we feel good. We have a reason to feel good about every edge rusher, whether they're young, did something good on their last team, from college, whatever it is. But none of these guys proved it on the football field in the 17 games last year on a consistent basis. They were either on a different team. I'm saying for the Cowboys. They were either on a different team or in college, whatever. So we're projecting. But the defensive line, I might be on the other side. I'm going to give it like a B+.
Okay,
I think it's going to be a pretty good defensive line, and I'm not that scared of teams running the ball on us. Now, when you play a really good quarterback, I think it could get a little spooky, like someone that knows what's going on. Hey, they can stop the run. I feel good about the edges. But I think Marshawn Nealand and Fowler are going to step up. I don't think they're going to be Micah. I don't think them two combined are going to be Micah. But Micah didn't get Winnie a lot of games. So maybe being Micah is not what you need.
And that's kind of my point is, like, you trade a guy that we talk about being a top five defensive player in the league.
Kind of in a vacuum.
In a vacuum. But you're still on here saying, dude, you feel good. This could be good. This could still be a good defensive front. B+.
I like it.
What does that say about the move? Like, you know, let us know in the text as well, in the text line. But that to me shows, like, it wasn't necessarily a one-man show with Mike. He, you know, and this group might have been added a little more depth with the Kenny Clark move as well, too. And so, I don't know. I'm with you. I think that they have to be a B+, based off what you said on the secondary, and I totally agree with you on the secondary. This group's going to have to be a top 12-10 unit in the league if the Cowboys defense wants to have a good year.
Well, I think what the Micah thing shows you is, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn right here, the gap from Micah to the other pass rushers is less than Kenny Clark to Mozzie Smith.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Like, Micah is a 99 overall player, if you want to use Madden. He is cream of the crop. Like,
which how we rate our players.
Yes, he is up there. Marshawn Nealand, Dante Fowler, say they're an 80, a 78, whatever. Like, there is a drop-off. Don't get it twisted. There is a drop-off, and you're not going to have some guy just wrecking games. Like, it is nice having a pass rusher out there that can just, it's 3rd and 8, and you almost feel like he's going to be in the backfield. You don't have that, but I feel a lot worse knowing I got Mozzie Smith right next to Osa, and they can just go, we'll just run it, Mozzie, and get 6 yards every play. We feel very confident about that. That drop-off and now having Kenny Clark, who I'm not saying it's Micah Parsons or even close to, but is 10 times better than what Mozzie Smith was giving you. And I love Mozzie. Talked to him in the locker room. Great kid. I'm praying for the kid. Hoping he turns out. But it's football. It's a business. I need you to play well. Having him and Solomon Thomas as your backups and having Kenny Clark and Osa, that's a good defensive tackle room. That is no one's going in there going, we'll just run the ball. It's the Cowboys. I mean, you've got two very good defensive tackles now, and you've got two right on the dot B, in my opinion, Marshawn Nealand, Dante Fowler. So overall, I give the defense a C+.
Yeah.
A C+, because I think you are going to get exploited by good teams, but bad teams, I feel like you'll be balanced and you'll be able to stay in some games.
So C+ defense. We rated position on offense. What do you rate the offense as a whole?
The offense as a whole, we'll give you this. So the B-. I think that obviously the passing game carries you a lot, but that tackle, not knowing what's going on in tackle, and the running back to me is a huge scare, and you only got 4 receivers, so you're one injury or one guy not showing up. Like, if Kevontae Turpin's not good, and they can just say, hey, you literally have 2 pass catchers, and Jake Ferguson's dealing with injuries, this offense gets very one-dimensional very quick. Okay, CeeDee and George are phenomenal. We're going to drop back in coverage and just let you throw stuff underneath and run the ball. We don't believe in you. So Did I say C plus or B minus?
B minus offense, C plus defense.
Yeah,
that's right. And you have the Cowboys winning 7 games, so that's probably what that equals out to. Yeah, that's good math right there.
Tell us, text in what you think of the offense and defense. Which one are you higher on? Which one do you have more questions about? I know a question I do not have. The Texas Rangers keep winning ball games. They go and sweep the A's. How do they do it?
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The standouts, and do they still have a chance to make the playoffs? We'll discuss all of that in next on the KNC Masterpiece.
This segment of The Fan is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today at carsforkids.org. And by the Frankels. If you have ever been injured in a car or truck wreck, call Frankel first, 214 or 817-333-333-333. With Frankel and Frankel, there is never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Frankel and Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas.
Thank you, Jet Nelson, bringing us back. Sounded nice and crispy. Don't look now. The Rangers are right on the cusp of getting into the playoffs. The only team holding it from them is the Seattle Mariners. They are 2.5 games back. Seattle, 73-64. Your Texas Rangers, 71-67. Everybody wrote them off, myself included, Fred Davis included. I would say probably half of the show, maybe KNC, didn't write them off. They're big believers. I didn't see it coming. You don't look good against the Angels. All of a sudden, you play the A's, who have, if you listen to Jared, been one of the hottest teams, if not the hottest team in baseball the last couple months. And you take care of business and sweep them, score 9 runs in each of your last 2 games. And kind of coming from guys that you wouldn't expect it. You get, in the first 2 games, Michael Hellman and our boy Dylan Moore stepping up. You get Josh Young, who has been on a tear. I want to say 3 hits in his last 4 games in each of his games. You've had Jock Peterson knocking in dongs, getting some ribbies the other day. Adolis Garcia, since he came back from his IL stint, all of a sudden is making contact with the ball. Josh Smith, who hasn't had a double digit, hasn't had more than 1 hit in a game. He gets 2 last night along with 3 walks. So everybody on this team with no Corey Seager, no Marcus Semien, who are both presumably out for the year, Eovaldi, who we know is out for the year. And all of a sudden, this team just can't stop winning. On the bump last night for your Texas Rangers was DeGrom, who only had to go 5 innings, gives up 2 hits, 6 strikeouts, only allows 1 walk. He was nails. On the other side, our boy Ginn for Oklahoma, our boy JT Ginn, did not have the out, and he went 6 innings, gives up 5 runs, gives up 2 dongs. It got scary in that 8th inning. The Rangers give up 5 runs and then give up another one in the 9th. The Rangers were trying their best to blow that game, but 9 runs was enough of a cushion. Brennan, are the Texas Rangers going to make the playoffs?
You know, do I want to go there yet? You're into September. This is where the season really starts. It's why you play 162 games. This is what makes baseball unique and fun, is you're never really out of it. To put that in perspective, the Detroit Tigers last year made the playoffs. They were 8 games back in the wild card. So, and they were able to make a run in September and make the playoffs. I do not trust the Seattle Mariners. They are notorious for letdowns at the end of the year. They always seem to be the team on the outside looking in. And I trust Bruce Bochy and the staff and what Bruce is able to do. I'm going to say you got 1 team to chase and you're 2.5 back. You could literally be tied for the wild card by the end of the week, potentially. And you also get the Stros at home for a 3-game series this weekend that is going to be huge in Globe Life. I'm going to say yes. Why not be positive on Labor Day, man? People driving, right, enjoying the holiday. Why should I sit here and say no when you're making a run, you're hot? And baseball is a big momentum sport. Jock Peterson was sleepwalking much of the year. He's woken up. Josh Young, who had to be designated to the minors,
he
is back.
He can't stop hitting
He
right
can't
now.
Stop hitting. You mentioned Josh Smith. If Nathan Eovaldi and Corey Seager, and I know Semien as well too, but he was already kind of out. The Eovaldi news stings a lot. The Corey with appendicitis really hurts. If those guys were healthy, I would say yes. I would feel very good. The team's playing well. They're playing great baseball, and they're finally hitting. It's like the bats were pretty much silent for a better part of a year and a half, 2024 into much of 2025, and they've woken up. And that's a scary team. If you can go and beat two or three against the Diamondbacks in Arizona and then come back home and potentially win two or three or sweep the Astros, you are in a great position to make the playoffs. You're a good series away from being tied for the wild card.
You got Evan Carter, who's also out, Jake Berger that's out. So you've had a bunch of new guys stepping in for you. Like we said, Dylan Moore, who most of you guys probably hadn't heard of. I want to say he came from Seattle. Then you also had our boy Michael Hellman getting some reps, and both of those guys have stepped up to the plate. These guys are not going 0-for-5 at the plate and striking every play, whether they're getting walks. I think they both have a home run as well. They've been getting some ribbies in. So I've been really excited about this team. I don't want to say playing small ball, but just playing inspired baseball. There wasn't an ego before, but there's a little bit of an expectation when you have guys like Seager, Semien, Eovaldi, the year he's having. But shout out to the guys not, you know, giving up on the season, saying, hey, we still have a chance, and now you come out of the series sweeping the A's just 2.5 games back with the Diamondbacks on the road, going to Arizona to play them. Today at 7 o'clock, you'll have Patrick Corbin on the bump. Feel pretty good about him.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised about the Rangers not giving up. A Bruce Bochy-led team, he's been there, he's done that. A lot of the guys that were on that World Series team that had to go through adversity, winning on the road in the playoffs there, are still in this locker room. So this is not a shock. There was eventually going to be a regression to the mean. You cannot be that bad for that long. There's too much talent on this roster. I know no one really hits for average anymore, but these guys are starting to finally put some runs together. When runners are in scoring position, they're actually scoring. I feel like I was at several games this year where it's like, man, this game was 2 hours and 5 minutes and you left like 10 guys on base, or you barely got 10 guys on base. And so it's nice to see this. I don't know if they've got enough with Eovaldi out and Seager, but you just never know. You're within striking distance. 4.5 games back in the division when the Astros were coming in is not that much. 2.5 back in the wild card against the Mariners, like we said. You're there. Like, you only have one team to pass in front of you. The Guardians and Royals are close. You are now over them by a game. I thought when the Kansas City series a couple weeks ago happened, I kind of thought you were done at that point. It just didn't seem like you were going to be able to really push through that. But I'm glad I was wrong, and now there's reason to believe. I mean, this team can make the playoffs.
You want to hear how bad my futures bet was for the Rangers?
I would love to hear how bad.
I put this in before the season started, obviously, in the offseason. Feeling really good about this offense. There's so much power. The thing the Rangers sucked at was hitting the fastball. They bring in Jock Peterson. They bring in Jake Berger. We got another year of Wyatt Langford. Adolis is going to bounce back. I'm thinking this team, everybody's going to hit 30 home runs. So this is the bet I put in. Wyatt Langford over 29.5 home runs.
Okay.
Wyatt's sitting at 20 on the season. He was at 15 for like 3 months. Corey Seager, 2.5 multi-home run games. I want to say he has 2 at least. I don't know if he got that third one. I know for a fact he's got 2. Adolis Garcia, over 27.5 home runs. Adolis is sitting at 18.
You gotta have a killer September, man. These guys are going to have legendary Septembers, which I hope they do for those bets to pay off.
Jake Berger, over 26.5
Oh, my gosh. Runs. You were expecting this Ranger team to be the 2010-2011 offense, it looked like.
If you're wondering where Jake Berger is on the home runs, he has 12. Shohei Ohtani over 39.5.
You didn't bet your rent or your mortgage on this. I mean, you're not sleeping in the studio.
What was my
if
bet?
If this doesn't
this
happen,
was a $2 entry for $100.
Okay. All right. So you're fine.
Jock Peterson over 20.5 homers. Is Jock even on the list?
He's at 8, I think, now after his homers this last week, I believe.
Jock Peterson's at 8 home runs.
8 home runs, yeah.
I feel like I should get some money back because these guys were injured. You know, these guys weren't playing. It's not like, you know.
No, they were pretty bad, too.
They were pretty
bad. It's not all injury-based, I think.
We're going to blame it all on injuries, the Texas Rangers.
But they're hitting now. They're hitting now, which is what matters.
They're not going to hit for my bets, but they are going to hit for your Rangers. Let's see what you guys are saying on the text line. Don't forget Langford. Someone's saying Corey Seager can come back. I don't know. I'm not an appendicitis expert. So if he comes back, that would be great. What if Bruce Bochy falsely pulled Nathan Eovaldi, Martin, and Corey to give the Rangers batters a false sense of no pressure because the season is probably over. Sometimes that jump starts the bat. So that would make Bruce Bochy a genius. I think maybe. What do you think about that conspiracy theory?
Which one?
About them pulling these guys when they're healthy just to inspire the bats.
Yeah, I mean, look, Bruce, again, like his Giants, you know, he always seemed to pull the right buttons at the right time. I mean, the dude won what? He won in 2010, 2012, 2014, 2023. I mean, the guy wins World Series, and he knows when to kind of get the best. He's very soft-spoken in the locker room, so it wouldn't shock me at all that Bruce had a little secret sauce when it comes to pulling guys. You know, he's not going to get in there and yell at you, so I do feel like Bruce probably's got stuff up his sleeves that we don't know about. I would say that that's a fair conspiracy to buy into.
And people are jumping on the bandwagon on the text line. Bruce Bochy every other year World Series.
Yes, that is a. I was gonna bring that. It's not an odd. He was evens from 2010 to 2014. Maybe it's the odds in the 2020. Maybe we're going 25, 27, 29.
Okay, I'll say this: if this team makes the playoffs, then at that point, you maybe can get back a Seager and a Baldy if they're back from their injuries. I'm not a doctor. Blake's not going to do any diagnosis here. I'm not 100% sure.
This is why I say if Uvaldi was not hurt, he's arguably the best pitcher in baseball this year, lowest ERA.
Dog!
If you had a three-game wild card series and your first two starters are Uvaldi and DeGrom, you are feeling very good about winning a 2-3 in that scenario. Mm-hmm. And if you get to the if you would be in the ALDS at that point, anything can happen, as we've seen. So, like, the team that won 2 years ago was the wild card team. They go into Tampa Bay. They smoke them. They go into Baltimore. They smoke them.
I mean, they smoke.
They were the
Tampa
road warriors, right?
Those games were not close.
And so it's just like if that's the one thing. It's not even the Semien and Corey Seager, because I love Marcus Semien and he's a great player, but he has not been hitting that way. He has not been adding as much value as you would hope. Seager's starting to kind of hit more before his appendicitis.
But hey, we got Michael Hellman.
So you got Michael Hellman. But like, if you had Uvaldi, I would be saying, dude, this team is going to make the playoffs. That's the one concern I have more than the offensive guys when it comes to postseason.
Okay, Tolos, I'm going to read the Texas Rangers schedule coming up, and you tell me, are they making the playoffs? They're out 2.5 games. You've got a chance to make up some of that ground today. You got the Diamondbacks out in Arizona the next 3 games. Then you've got the Stros. Give me your record prediction after those 2 series, Brennan, then we'll move on to the last 2. So you got Diamondbacks for 3 and the Stros for 3 at home.
Okay, I'm going to go 2-3 in Arizona.
Okay.
So you'll be 73-68 coming into the Astros series. And then I'm here. It's Labor Day. We're sweeping the Astros.
This week. Give me Astros.
It is my first show here filling in for Kevin and Corey on the KNC Masterpiece. Why am I going to come in here and bring some pessimism into the show? I'm just not going to do that. So you're going to be 76-68 by September 8th. And if I'm wrong, I don't have to come back on here ever again.
Don't worry. I'll pick up the bad vibes. I think the Rangers go 2-3 in the Diamondbacks, and I think the Astros take care of business for the Rangers and put them out of their misery. I think that's what the season is.
Wow.
Yep, I said it. You can be mad at Blake. Brennan's a nice guy.
You're just gonna say it's over here in a week. Getting swept? Are you saying?
I'll say this. You're not winning the series, and then even after that, say you do win the series, you play the Brewers right after. The best team in baseball.
At home. Still, Rangers have had a good.
Rangers are good at home, but that is a tough. And then you play the Mets. Then you play the Astros again.
The schedule in September is brutal. I won't pretend that you're not getting the White Sox and company coming in. You know, very. You do have a very difficult September schedule.
Give me some optimism. If you pretty much have to win every series. You don't have to win every game, but I'm pretty sure the math works out. You could maybe lose one series. As far as what the other teams are doing around you as well.
Okay.
If the Mariners, if the Astros, if they're all winning, if Tampa Bay, I think if you somehow come out of this and you're winning these series, Rangers win it all.
Well, okay. So now you're going, they're going to win the World Series if they go well.
Because if they make the playoffs, that means they've beat the Brewers. That means they beat the Astros. That means they beat the Astros twice. That means they beat the Mets, beat the Guardians. We got Evo coming back, Seager coming back. They're winning the World Series. Look, so it's one of the two things. They're going to lose to the Astros and Brewers and the season's over.
Or they're going all the way.
Or they're going all the dang way. Come on, Tolos. Are you fired up for the Texas Rangers? I am. I'm not going to be a pessimist anymore. I think the Rangers are the best team in baseball. Who we got coming up next?
Zyler Buchanan's joining the show, host of the Broadway Shuffle podcast, Big 12 guru. He'll be coming up next talking college football.
Let's do it.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This segment of The Fan is brought to you by Classic Chevrolet. Get to Classic Chevrolet in Grapevine, back-to-back number one Chevy dealership in the world. They got more Chevys than anyone, all priced to sell. Silverado, Tahoes, Blazers, Malibus, Equinoxes, and more. Visit ClassicChevrolet.com. This is Texas. This is Classic Chevrolet. Together, let's drive, relax, and enjoy the difference based on new Chevrolet registrations 2023 and 2024.
Welcome back to the KNC Masterpiece here. Blake Elliott joined by Brennan Baxter. We're about to go out on the D&M Leasing Hotline here in just a second and talk all things college football. You guys are lighting up the text program. This guy comes in first show, all caps, and says, Rangers sweep the Astros. Automatic fan favorite now. they are mad at you for saying Uvalde instead of Evaldi.
Sorry, man. Speech impediment.
It's okay. It's
Don't
okay.
blame me.
They are still fans of Brennan Baxter. I'm a fan of Brennan Baxter. Let's go out to Brennan's friend. Let's go on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Who you got for us, Brennan?
Yeah, Zyler Buchanan joining the show, host of the Broadway Shuffle podcast, Big 12 guru. Zyler, we got you, man. How you doing today?
Brennan, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. So I want to go to Texas, Ohio State first. The talk of the college football world was centered on Ohio State, Arch Manning. What was he going to do? Was he going to carry on the Heisman hype into Columbus? It turned out to not be the case. What was shocking to you about the Texas-Ohio State game? And how surprised were you to see Arch Manning not do as well as many expected him to week one?
Yeah, I think with Arch, there's obviously going to be some growing pains your first time as a full-time starter, but also going up against a defense of Ohio State's caliber, that is a tough welcome to college football. And I know he's played some games, but that'll be one of the best, if not the best, defense he plays all year. You've got a former NFL defensive coordinator who's got plenty of Super Bowls under his belt, throwing a lot of crazy stuff at him. I'm not out on Arch Manning. I think the bigger thing, if you're a Texas fan, maybe to be a little concerned with, is some of the mechanical stuff with Arch was not as crisp as you would hope for from a third-year guy. Just short-arming some stuff. Some of his footwork in the backfield was tricky. But once again, we're not in those coaching huddles. We don't know what they're talking about, what they're telling him to do. Those would be things I'm more concerned with. But it's his first game. You're allowed a couple bad ones, especially on the road at a top-five team. Not always going to be super smooth sailing in that regard.
Before I ask a question, we do have to address the elephant in the room. We probably have three of the coolest names on the radio right now, not including mine. Of course, mine's pretty basic. But we've got Zyler Buchanan on the phone right now. We've got Brennan Baxter across from me, and we've got Jet Nelson. So we got Baxter, Jet, and Zyler.
And Zyler's also got a brother named Jet.
Are you kidding
I'm
me?
I'm not kidding.
Who coincidentally is a pilot, oddly enough. He went after that namesake, but a lot of fun stuff. Well, there.
Our Jet Nelson, I don't know if I'd let him fly a plane, but he is in the Pimp Cup. But Zyler, when it comes to that Clemson LSU game, the nightcap the other night, Cade Klubnik, Garrett Nussmeier, a lot of hype going into that, kind of the second most hype game, obviously, behind the Ohio State Texas game. What did you learn from that game? And is it less about Cade Klubnik and more about the LSU defense, or what was your thoughts and takeaways from that game?
Yeah, and I think we can all get into the situation where we just have our priors and what we thought about a team before the season and then the week one information. And so we make sweeping assessments of teams, and sometimes inappropriately, and I'm guilty of this myself. I think if you wanted to have some takeaways, the LSU defense does look significantly improved. That was a real struggle for them last year. You knew some of the offensive pieces were good. You'd seen them be good. You'd seen the production be good. The defense was a lot less certain. And so watching them go into a pretty hostile environment and what should be, I think Clemson's probably a little oversold, but probably at worst a top 15, top 20 team. Going into that road environment, week one, no warm-up games, and pretty much holding that offense in check for the vast majority of the game, I thought that was really impressive for LSU. That put them, top three in the SEC if they weren't already there for me already. they're going to be a real contender for the playoff. And having that notch on your belt when it comes to playoff selection time and seeding, if they go, you know, 9-3, 10-2 in the SEC, that's going to be a really nice trump card that they have, that top end road win that I think the committee is going to value a lot. So to me, it was more about LSU. I think we know that Clemson is pretty good, and Clemson hung with LSU. But I think the story was LSU, the defense improving, and them going out and showing it week one.
Yeah, Zeiler, when you're looking at SEC, I want to kind of get to the Baylor-Auburn game. You're a Big 12 guy. Baylor hosts Auburn on Friday. A lot of expectations on Baylor preseason. Big 12, you know, co-favorite, top five odds to win the Big 12. Cause for concern if you're a Baylor Bear fan, seeing Auburn come in, dominate the run game like they did. Baylor's defense was pretty much a no-show under Dave Aranda calling the plays there. Takeaways from the Baylor-Auburn game, how concerned should you be if you're a Baylor fan coming away from that loss?
Yeah, I think there's several avenues that you could pursue if you're a Baylor fan kind of analyzing that game. The defensive sides are obviously tricky, but you lost your starting safety, Devin Turner, before the season. You lost Kendrick Simpkins was out for the game. And then you lost Jackie Marshall in the first quarter. And those were, you know, probably three of the five best defensive players. And Jackie Marshall's their best run defender. And so, you know, losing those guys, but especially Jackie early on in the game, I think was tough. The weird thing about Baylor is that you have Aranda at the helm and the defense just seems to still not be clicking. I didn't think Auburn did anything that impressive, especially not through the air. It was, you know, oh my goodness, I can't believe Jackson Arnold's going to run it again right up the middle. Like, who would have thought? So that's where I would be concerned if I'm a Baylor fan, because if you're in the Big 12, you're going to see quarterbacks that are just as good, if not better, running the ball. You've got Avery Johnson. You've got Devin Dampier. You've got Jalen Daniels. You've got plenty of guys, you know, Sorsby, and I don't remember who's all on Baylor's schedule, but that's not going to be the last running quarterback they face, and it's probably not going to be the best running quarterback they face. If you're looking at it from an Auburn side, I thought the defense looked fine. I was maybe a little disappointed in what they did against Baylor. Baylor was able to move the ball pretty effectively, and I think Auburn will be good. I think this game was a lot more about Baylor than it was about Auburn in my mind. I didn't see anything that was super impressive from Jackson Arnold through the air, and he's got maybe the best receiving core in the conference, if not the country. I was very disappointed in him throwing the ball. He was an absolutely elite runner, though, and he did what he had to do to win the game. You got to tip your hat to that. Definitely a gamer. Just not necessarily – I'm not much higher on Auburn than I was going into that game.
Zeiler Buchanan joining us here on the Dean and Leeson Hotline. Zeiler, when it comes to the quarterbacks that had a lot of hype coming into, they're not named Arch Manning. You had Lenora Sellers, Drew Aller. We talked about Cade, John Mateer out of Oklahoma, of course. And then, of course, our boy Garrett Nussmeier. All those guys – in thought, who do you think had the best performance and who kind of helped their Heisman stock, if you will, and who hurt their stock the most?
Man, that's tough. I think that the Heisman's become such a narrative award. And so I think Garrett Nussmeier, being on a team that was thought of pretty highly before the season, going in and getting a big win like he did, and he played pretty well. I think he probably did the most. Washington, South Carolina, that team does not have the horses to make much noise in the SEC, in my mind. They're not going to get the wins that I think Lenoris needs. And I think anytime, I thought the Arch hype was a little overdone too. You know, him at plus 700 was a really rich price for somebody who'd only started three games and didn't beat out Quinn Ewers for the starting job. He still very well could go on and win. They're going to win a lot of games. But I thought Garrett Nussmeier had a great week. He got wins where a lot of quarterbacks didn't. Another sneaky guy that I think may have a chance, and it's just because he's experienced and they may rack up a lot of wins, is Carson Beck. I thought he looked good in that game last night. He's going to have to overcome the Mario Cristobal game management decisions, but I thought he looked good. And experience is something that I've forgotten about going into this season. There's so many quarterbacks that just don't have a ton of reps, and you're getting over the year of, you know, COVID quarterbacks, where everybody had an extra year. You had fifth and sixth year guys all over the place. And Beck being older, I think, could really put him in a nice spot to where he's not going to have as many dud games as I think you're going to see some of these Julian Sayin and all of those guys that, and Ty Simpson, for example, they're going to have some really bad games. I think Beck's floor is higher, and if they win a lot of games, he'll have a shot.
Zeiler, we've got TCU North Carolina tonight. Bill Belichick debut, TCU going on the road. TCU's had some problems with some big-time first games of the year, lost to Colorado 2 years ago. What are you expecting out of the Horned Frogs tonight? And do you think North Carolina could pull off the upset against the Horned Frogs there in Chapel Hill?
Yeah, this game's moved a lot on the betting markets. I think North Carolina opened as a favorite back in the summer. TCU is favored by 3.5. It's the roster discrepancy, you know, they brought in a lot of people with North Carolina, but TCU just clearly has the better roster on paper. There's not a Travis Hunter. There's not a Shedeur Sanders on the other side. I'm in on TCU winning this game pretty comfortably. And I say that as somebody that's not the biggest TCU or Sonny Dykes fan in the world, but I think on paper, this should be a game TCU wins pretty easily. The big wild card is Bill Belichick. If you had to give me Bill Belichick or Sonny Dykes as a coach, I'm going to take Belichick over just about every college coach in in-game adjustments and planning. He's just got so many skins on the wall. That's something where if it's close late, give me the Tar Heels. But I think the TCU roster is going to be a little bit too much for North Carolina.
Zyler, I'll ask you to project a little bit because none of us have seen it. I'm just going to trust your brain. What kind of offense / game style do you expect Bill Belichick to have for this Chapel Hill?
Man, your guess is going to be as good as mine. I think they're going to, as Bill Belichick is really good at doing, he's going to muck it up. He's going to probably bring some really exotic stuff, especially on the defensive side. That's where I think they're going to have to win the game. I don't envision them winning a high-scoring game. If they can get this game played in the low teens or the low 20s, I think that's the recipe for them winning. I don't envision UNC going out there and scoring a ton of points. I think where Bill Belichick really does a great job is on that defensive side. And so
talk me through your thought process for the storylines that you're watching going into now week two. Obviously, we're finishing up week one. What are you watching throughout the week that'll get you geared up for week two?
Yeah, the things that I'll be looking for is just what kind of jumps do I see some of these quarterbacks take? The guys that are going to get a lot of attention, you know, the Ty Simpsons, the Saiyan at Ohio State, you know, those guys that are kind of getting broken in as a first-year starting quarterback, what do they look like as these weeks progress? They always say the biggest jumps from week one to week two. And if you can see big leaps there, I think that's where you can start to believe in those teams a little bit more as contenders. I don't know that their quarterback play right now and what you've seen through 1 week is going to be good enough for them to be, you know, title contenders, but that's going to be something that I'm watching. And then some of the big non-con matchups, the ones that I'm really excited for, Kansas and Missouri. Kansas has looked really, really good to start the season. Now, granted, it's been against Wagner and Fresno State, which, you know, neither of those teams really scare you, but Kansas has looked much better than I thought they would based on their coordinator hires and what they lost in the offseason. Them going up against Missouri at Missouri, I think if they get a win there, that is really going to launch them into the spotlight. And then Oklahoma, Michigan is obviously a game with a lot of storylines. That's going to be something that's pretty fun, even if I don't really think too highly of either of those teams. Baylor has a big opportunity against SMU to kind of right the ship at an 11 a.m. kick there in the DFW area. That'll be a fun one. They'll be looking to bounce back. And then Iowa State, another really fun non-con matchup that's going to be pretty heated. Those are kind of the four games that I'm going to be, you know, tuned into. I don't really think there's anything else on the schedule that really catches my eye. Maybe one that I'll keep a slight eye on is Arizona State, Mississippi State. They're only a 6.5-point favorite in Starkville. They're going to have to find a way to get that done if they want to be a at-large contender in the playoff selection.
Zyler Buchanan joining us on 105.3 The Fan from the Broadway Shuffle podcast. Zyler, last question for you. Going to put you on the spot. Now, after week one, who you got winning the Big 12?
You know, I'll take out the bias pick. I won't select my beloved Red Raiders. I'm gonna take the Utah Utes. I thought they really, really looked good against UCLA. That's a team that style of ball will travel. They're going to punish you on the ground, and they're going to punish you defensively. Those are things that you don't worry about traveling when you go to some of these Big 12 road environments. I think they're the betting favorite right now, and I don't see any reason for them not to be. That's who I'll take, but that's like a 20% confidence. I think there's still 10 teams that could win that conference.
Fantastic job, Zyler. I'll have to add you to my Rolodex, like a Pokemon card, and we can call on you and have you on again. For the people that are hearing you for the first time, where can they find Zyler's work and social media?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on Twitter, Zyler Buchanan. There's only one of me. There's not many Zyler Buchanans out there, so it shouldn't be a hard one to find. And then I'm at a show called The Broadway Shuffle. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music. We do mainly tech content, but we still do some Big 12 and national stuff as well. It's a lot of fun, and we really enjoy this football season. It's a great time.
Well, fantastic job. We enjoyed having you on. You enjoy the rest of your Labor Day, sir.
Hey, thank you guys. I appreciate it. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks, Zyler.
Sir, there he goes. Zyler Buchanan joining us talking all things college football. The only thing we didn't get to ask him was about Alabama, Florida State.
I think we've got 40 minutes coming up on the on the recap at 12:20 to we'll get into the hot seat that Kalen DeBoer is on at Alabama.
Well, we'll get to that. Before we do that, on the other side, we'll talk about your Dallas Mavericks. We haven't talked about them in a while. Are you hyped for the Cooper Flagg season? Are they going to finish first, last, sixth, seventh in the lottery, win in the finals? Me and Brennan will discuss next on the KNC Masterpiece.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.